Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Ice Look at This Week in the Capitol. A very busy week means a very busy WISI was there. Fighting Bob Fest, first one without the founder, Ed Garvey. Milwaukee historian John Gerda. Governor Walker signs the overdue budget. Tony Evers wears two hats, superintendent of public instruction and Democratic candidate for governor. A bill would make it a felony to engage in a riot. And memories of the legacy of four-term governor Tommy G. Thompson. WISI was there.
Also in the grand progressive tradition of Wisconsin, we specially dedicate Fighting Bob Fest this year to the founder of Fighting Bob Fest, Ed Garvey.
The United States jumps into World War I in 1917. It's back in those years that not just in Milwaukee or Wisconsin, but you had this ethnic cleansing going on, so sauerkraut becomes Liberty cabbage, and hamburger becomes Salisbury steak. A sweet roll called a Bismarck becomes a Pershing. So you have this running away from anything smacking of the least bit of sympathy with anything German.
You know, today we're going to sign a state budget, and it's kind of interesting because one of the questions I'm going to ask people is, what would you like? Would you like more money for schools or lower property taxes? The nice thing is, in this budget, you get both.
And most of us here are retired educators, and our biggest concern is the school budget, because they're telling everyone that this is an increase to the budget. It is, but it's really money they took away from us. They're just giving it back, so we're not happy with that.
I think the big challenge heading into the budget was, for the third straight budget, what's going to be the solution to our long-term transportation funding problem? And the governor is going to borrow again, he's going to delay projects, and our infrastructure is going to continue to decline.
Every dollar we shift from our state coffers to pay for roads and increasingly paying for the debt on roads is a dollar we move out of the classroom for the child. I am sick of that politics, the false choices, and the endless debates on this issue. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. Let's help people understand how we fund our schools and how investing in our kids is the best job creation strategy on the books.
A riot is now going to be a felony conviction. It's going to follow somebody around for a long time. It could result in the loss of their voting privileges. It's much more serious than a misdemeanor.
And then I think about what happened in 2016 in Milwaukee, what I would call a riot, and I've seen their vehicles with the damage to their hoods because there were bricks in it. Show me where the kerosene and where they were, those vehicles were set on fire. So not having a definition currently in the statutes of what a riot is when our law enforcement officers were on the front line trying to keep the public peace.
So tonight it is my honor to ask you all to lift whatever you're drinking and give a toast to the greatest governor this state has ever seen and one of the greatest governors in the history of America, Tommy G. Thompson. Congratulations.
I love life. I love politics. I love government. And people ask me, what do you think is your biggest accomplishment? And I've had many. And I'm proud of each and every one of those successes. But I would not have been able to have any of those successes, either at the state level or at the federal level, without the people in this room.
Let's talk about the governor's vetoes on K-12. I was surprised. Were you surprised that he vetoed the low spending? Because the Nygrens and the Felskowskis and other members of the Assembly Republican Caucus put a lot of time into that would take per people spending from 9,100 to 92 to 93. Mm-hmm. That was a big veto.
It's interesting that education is the centerpiece of this budget, especially the $640 million roughly they put into K-12. But this veto is probably the most significant that Walker made of the 99 that he issued or told us about earlier this week. And what's interesting is, while people are kind of taken aback by why he did it, it fits in with Walker's priorities, which were education, no gas tax increase, and your property tax bill in 18 is lower than it was in 14.
Yep.
Now, with this plan, remember we do revenue limits, which means you can raise so much from property taxes after you see what you get from the state, right?
Yes.
By raising that per pupil limit for those low-spending districts who were locked in 20-some years ago, you're allowing them to raise property taxes. Now, the counter is Republicans put money in to kind of offset that and still came with the property tax bill lower in 18 than it was in 14. But to Walker, it's all about property taxes, and this kind of opens the door for a hike.
That's what he said. He said this: the plan as passed by the ledge threatens substantial increase in property taxes. But JR, he also vetoed $2 million for shared services, mm-hmm. which is another priority of many in the assembly Republican
sharing.
Caucus, and $750,000 for grade sharing, yep. which means neighboring districts one could offer K through three, and another offer 4 through 6, and then back and forth. I was really surprised.
It leads some Republicans to feel like some of this stuff was personal because they were the more difficult caucus for Walker in terms of not just doing what Walker wanted. Now, in talking to people all week long, I've had people tell me that's not true. The governor's the kind of person to hold a grudge or, have a list of vetoes in his pocket to get back at somebody. But it's a sign of how frayed relations are right now that some Republicans, one of the first thoughts was, he's out to get us, or that this was something personal. In their minds, there's no reason to wipe out whole grade sharing. Now, the grants. Walker's message, though, was this was allowed 2 years ago in the budget and nobody's taking advantage of it. It's supposed to be a cost-saving measure. Why are we spending money to encourage people to do something that should be saving them money if they do it? So that's his philosophy.
Yeah, that's his justification of the grade sharing, mm-hmm. that it was passed 2 years ago, nobody's done it, so why are we spending $750,000? He also, requiring school referendums to coincide with general elections, that's no big surprise.
No.
That was a priority of Senator Strobel,
yep.
and capping us.
So it wipes out the special election option in November of odd-numbered years, I believe. So you got to go to regular scheduled elections, basically, from now on. After 2018, I think there's an effective date in there to give the current referendum that are scheduled time to get through the system, but after sometime next year, that'd be it.
It seemed to me that the veto dealing with K-12 that most defended Assembly Republicans, Speaker Voss and Mr. Nygren, was the low spending.
Oh, absolutely.
And they have not ruled out overrides, but you and I know, JR, 1985 was
yes.
the last time a gubernatorial veto by Democratic Governor Tony Earle was overridden.
And I think Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate earlier, said there's no way.
No chance.
No chance taking up a veto override in his house. So if the Assembly wanted to, it would be symbolic because the Senate won't do it.
Okay. Now let's talk about some of the other vetoes that he did on non-spending things. He's going to let local governments continue to regulate quarries.
Mm-hmm.
That was a priority with the League of Wisconsin Municipalities.
Also another one that Robin Voss had kind of pushed for in the budget that, again, leads to that kind of like, well, was there something there about these vetoes? But Walker's message was, this is so substantive, it should have been in separate legislation, not tucked in the budget.
Kills, $2.5 million to study tolling. Now, you and I read his veto message. He says the DOT can study tolling on its own. But excuse me, Assembly Speaker Voss has said tolling could be a long-range solution. There was some interest in both Republican caucuses, even a few Democrats. Why did he veto that?
Another Voss priority. And that, again, I'm not saying that any of this stuff was personal or that it was targeted, but it's part of, these were things that some Republicans in particular pushed for that leads them to feel like there was something going on here. But Governor Walker's not really interested in tolling. He's not interested in gas tax hike or reservation fee. He wants to do something else for transportation. I don't get the impression that Governor Walker wants to move toward more revenue for transportation that fits in with that philosophy.
Why did his veto move up the repeal of the prevailing wage by a year?
That was part of the package, so a week ago, I was in the state Senate late Friday afternoon, found out they were working on a package of vetoes. That evening, after the final passage, around 8:30-ish, 9 o'clock, we got the list. And one of the lists was moving up the prevailing wage repeal. This is a priority for those three Republican senators who got a package of veto promises from Walker of, okay, you give us this and we'll vote for final passage. They needed their votes to pass it. One of them was moving up the prevailing wage repeal, which is a big deal for especially Dewey Strobel's been pushing for that for a while.
Okay, but now let's talk about this budget does not move into the immediate construction pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
The east-west, the north-south on the Zoo Freeway, but two legislators did get theirs enumerated, mm-hmm. which means it's a priority in the eyes of the Department of Public Department of Transportation, excuse me. But his vetoes dropped I-94 in St. Croix County, Highway 154 in Sauk County. They will not be enumerated. So he's got a few angry legislators. These are their road projects.
Yes, but it also is kind of typical for a governor saying, this is my administration's province, not yours. Because it's his DOT. His DOT, in his mind, should be deciding what the priorities are, not lawmakers getting earmarks in the budget because they have a powerful position.
Well, I asked Fiscal Bureau, have you guys run the potential deficit in the next biennium, 2019 to 21, in the Department of Transportation Fund, and they said $93 million. So we have not solved, everybody knows, we've not solved this long-term funding problem.
That is probably, Republicans will admit, the biggest failure of this budget is not having a long-term answer. And if you pull back big picture and look down the road, if Scott Walker's reelected in 2018, what's going to change? The answer is not much. Because he's not going to sign a gas tax increase. He's not going to go for a registration fee increase. So what do you do? Tolling was one thing that Robin Voss thought was an alternative. But what do you do for a long-term solution? And I think people would argue that with as long as Governor Walker is still governor, there's not going to be one. It involves more revenue. They could find something else to do. But if you're looking for more revenue, don't count as long as he's governor.
Okay, I want to mention two other vetoes. I think it was Representative Nygren who inserted a provision saying, if you're released as a sex offender, you're released back into your local mm-hmm. county. He vetoed that. Now, because it deals with sex offender, that's got some ability to raise some tempers, doesn't it?
Yes, and basically it softens some of the restrictions of, like, you know, being locally next to churches, schools, all these things.
Yes.
Because some communities have put up so many barriers that when their sex offenders are released, they can't come back to their county of origin. And other counties are saying, we're tired of having your sex offenders end up in our counties and have to deal with them. That was the impetus for this package, but again, he said that should be in a separate bill, not in the budget.
He also zeroed out, meaning they have no budget for the Judicial Council.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to his recommendation in February.
Yep. Also, I think the Supreme Court wasn't happy when they raised the salary of the lone employee of that commission, so nixed the funding for it. It still exists, but there's no money for it.
He also zeroed out, let me get the name right, the Educational Approval Board, which oversees for-profit colleges. That means they're going to be deregulated, or does that overstate it?
Walker argues there's other oversight through his administration that counts. I mean, Governor Walker's has philosophy the last couple of budgets about trying to streamline government, find redundancies in his mind, get rid of them. So in his mind, I think, this is about doing with his board, but it still maintains something in his administration.
Okay, now let's step back and take a 10,000-foot look. These are the last budget vetoes before his reelect. Mm-hmm. What message did he send with 99 vetoes that went counter to some priorities of GOP legis?
No, he's going to go out and talk about the investment in K-12 education. He can talk about your property tax bill.
Tuition freeze.
He can talk about tuition freeze. He's going to talk about no gas tax hike. We heard some of that yesterday. We did the bill signing up in Neenah. Those things he talked about quite a bit. The investments in UW system, because they still get more funding along with the tuition freeze. Investments in tech colleges to create more opportunities. So he's going to talk up those big picture things. The vetoes aren't really, I think, part of the message. It's more of those positives that he can go out and sell the campaign trail.
But as a result of the vetoes, how would you characterize his relationship with GOP legis?
Well, it's not just the vetoes. You have to kind of pull back and look over the last several years. It's been deteriorating. And in talking to people about this budget, it was difficult from the start. They've never seen two leaders come into the press room, the Capitol, and have competing news conferences to rip each other. We had Governor Walker kind of floating ideas that didn't go anywhere about how to break the impasse. And then this really rare veto promise to win three votes on a Friday night to pass a budget. I haven't seen that kind of stuff before.
Well, and I asked Speaker Voss about that at the Tommy Thompson Gala, and he referred to the three GOP senators as terrorists.
He used the word renegades, talked about their pettiness. One of them had an aide fire back, well, if we're so bad at negotiating their caucus, how can we've had, you know, Voss in a tizzy, yeah, quote unquote, the last 4 or 5 days? So it's not a good place right now. They need to get away from each other. And we just heard from Representative Steineke, the majority in the Assembly today, that they're not coming back on the floor until at least October 31st.
Right.
The Senate Majority Leader Scott Joseph told me this week they also won't be back until then. So that gives them About a 6 week break.
A cooling off period?
Yeah. So now it allows for committee work, some time to breathe. But I think some of the stuff's going to sting for a while.
Okay. So the governor gets off a plane from Japan, immediately goes and signs into law the Foxconn bill. Let's listen to how the governor framed the significance of Foxconn, because he said transformational ecosystem, a term I don't quite understand, but he said this is going to allow Wisconsin to attract a lot of talent when Foxconn builds here. Let's listen to the governor.
This is one of those things that's transformational. This is one of those things where we'll look back and we'll see the impact it had, again, not just on this county or adjoining counties in this region, but we'll have all across the state. It will have a tremendous impact, again, not only on jobs, but in terms of attracting talent. I know a lot of employers, understandably so, the economy is so good, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you're going to put 13,000 more jobs in Wisconsin? Now, our quest in doing this is to send a message not just to employers, but to send a message to talent, talent across this region, across the country and around the world, that this is a place, if Foxconn picked us, you should pick Wisconsin to come work at, not just at Foxconn, but we got a lot of other great businesses, big and small alike, that we'd love to plug you into. And so we're going to use this as leverage to attract even more employees, even more talent, to help employers from one end of the state to the other. We're going to do even more to go from brain drain to brain gain, because we think when you have advanced manufacturing like this, high-tech, highly dynamic manufacturing, it's the sort of thing that is a compelling argument, not just to keep our talent, but for those kids that are starting out this school year in sixth grade, taking their academic and career plans, it's a pretty compelling argument that maybe I should get interested in manufacturing, because look at the cool things that are being made in the state of Wisconsin.
JR, now let's talk about the next steps on the Foxconn deal. WEDIC CEO Mark Hogan says they hope to have a contract that would be presented to the full board on the 28th, which is, I think, next Wednesday or Thursday.
Yes.
Yes. But the process is they're going to approve, if the final contract is drafted, they're going to go into a closed session, and they'll make a decision, but they will not announce it publicly, because all they will be told, authorized to do, is to make the formal offer to Foxconn. So the bottom line, here's where I'm going with this. We, the citizens of Wisconsin, won't know the details of the contract for days, weeks yet.
So this legislation was kind of the enabling package, right?
Yes.
They had to kind of finalize these details.
Set the table.
So what's going to be interesting to watch going forward and talk to you this week is with Foxconn, is where are we at a year from now? For Governor Walker, he's right now can tout the theory of Foxconn, right? 13,000 jobs, possibly. A $10 investment, possibly. We won't know for sure for years if that comes to fruition. If next year there are signs of progress, there are shovels in the ground, walls being erected somewhere in Racine County for Foxconn.
Hundreds hired.
Walker can see, there's progress. If there's not progress, if we don't see that, then it gives Dems more fodder for the, well, look at Brazil. Look at Pennsylvania. Look at all the other places where they said we're going to do big things and didn't. So, but the real risk is, for Walker, is only that. There's not a big, like, the long-term risk of this not working out will be years after he's probably left office. Even when's a third term. He said before, three is it. So we're talking 2020, it's operational. 2022, he's done, you know. The other big thing about Foxconn for Walker is the leadership aspect. He can go out and sell now. Look, we competed for Foxconn. Other people wanted it, and we went out and got it. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like people like their governors, somebody told me this week, to be out there, like, touting the state and bragging, like Tommy Thompson, you know, bragging about Wisconsin. The other thing, though, to watch is with Democrats is they feel like there is an opportunity with Walker that if you drill down just below the, okay, the 13,000 jobs thing, there's the $3 billion thing. There's the, well, if it doesn't happen, we're going to be on the hook for a lot of money thing. There is some, like, surface positives for Walker, but some kind of things to worry about below the surface.
Okay, and Senate Democratic Leader Schilling asked the Ledge Council if about provisions of this that would speed up a Supreme Court, potentially, a Supreme Court resolution of whether this is legal. And they came back with what I see as a blueprint to opponents of the Foxconn deal. You just may want to sue, arguing that the Foxconn package illegally tells the courts how to handle it.
Yeah.
Your response?
What I don't know is there a severability provision that if you toss out the one piece, the whole thing is done? I don't know. I haven't read the bill close enough to know that.
I don't think there is a severability clause.
But beyond that, it's lawyers arguing about what's constitutional, what's not. I am not qualified to say if it is constitutional or not. But it gets fodder for a lawsuit. And these lawsuits, again, if you have lawsuits, it can tie things up and delay progress.
Hold up those construction cranes and mm-hmm. the bulldozers and the hiring.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, Foxconn is now law. Foxconn and the budget have sucked a lot of the lawmaking air out mm-hmm. of that Capitol, JR. But now they're coming back the last week in October. Let's look quickly at some of the major issues that they're going to potentially consider. Concealed carry.
Mm-hmm.
And that bill that got a hearing that would allow the carrying of concealed guns without training and a state permit, you see that as a serious contender for the fall?
It looks like it's got some momentum in the Senate. And talking to Robin Voss one day this week, he said his caucus hasn't looked at the bill yet and talked about it. There's a provision there. So right now, if you have a concealed carry permit and you carry a gun onto school grounds, you have some issues because of no gun zones on schools. Robin said he's always supported making sure that if you are a permitted concealed carry person, that you are not a felon just because you drop your kid off at school. He likes that provision of the bill. But the will it take it up? We're not clear yet in the assembly what's going to happen with that. So we'll see. To be sure. Then Juan Walker has said he likes things as they are. But that's always, you know, Walker also said about, what, right to work a few years back. Said, well, you know, I'm not worried about it because it's not my desk. You know, things are fine as they are. But
the fight over dark stores. I talked to a lawyer who's up to his eyes in it, and he said, yeah, that's going to surface.
Mm-hmm.
The issue there is whether dark stores, the major retailers say dark stores should be assessed differently mm-hmm. than open stores, a lot lower. You think that has got a chance to become law?
It's interesting because you have Republicans pushing this bill hard, and you have WMC, which is usually
Assistant Majority Leader Brooks.
Very successful in its
Strobel,
agenda,
excuse me.
Pushing back against it. So it's going to be interesting to watch that fight play out.
Do you think we will join the call for a U.S. Constitutional Convention for a balanced budget amendment?
I think there's support. I wouldn't bet against that bill, I'll put it that way.
And lift the moratorium on mining?
I think that they're going to really push very hard on that this fall.
Okay. Now let's talk to the official election of about the official election of Gordon Hintz mm-hmm. to lead the 35 Assembly Democrats. He's 43, former municipal budget analyst, congressional aide, elected to the Assembly in 2006, represents Oshkosh. I was wrong last week when I said there were going to be other contests for Assembly Democrats.
He was the only one. Jocasta Jamaripa was planning to challenge Diane Hesselbein for assistant. She dropped it in the end, wouldn't really tell me why. But likely a sign she couldn't gobble the votes together to win.
Yeah. And hence in his letter to Assembly Democrats, why I should be the leader. The goal of the minority is to be in the majority. No one is going to hand us anything. But then the Republican Rapid Response Team, just one sentence, sleazy politician Gordon Hintz has created scandal after scandal weighing a personal war on women. They're going to hang that over his head everywhere.
Well, what's going to be interesting to watch is there a way to really tie Hintz or make him a boogeyman in races? Now, for Republicans nationally, Nancy Pelosi, people know who Nancy Pelosi is. It's easy to make, you know, a congressional candidate Democrat like a crony of Nancy Pelosi. Gordon Hintz is known by who? No offense to Gordon, but like you, me, and the people of his district, the people in the Capitol, like he doesn't really have real high name ID. So trying to tie him to like vulnerable assembly candidates, that may be a tough sell. But Republicans who believe it negates the Democrats' ability to use the war on women argument, because they go, well, what about this? And we're talking about his arrest in 2011 at a massage parlor.
Citation.
A massage parlor was later busted for prostitution, and yelling, "You're blank dead," to a female Republican lawmaker on the floor of the Assembly during the Act 10 debate. Now,
after the Act 10 vote.
During his kind of acceptance speech in the Assembly Democratic Caucus this week, he talked about that, said, I was in a bad place in my life. Look at what I've done since then. He's got married, bought a house, had a kid.
Right.
I hope this vote is endorsement of the person I've become, not the person that I was.
Right. And I interviewed Gordon Hintz this week, and I asked him, are you the new assembly leader because of a generational coup? Let's listen to his answer. Was it a generational coup that led to your being elected leader?
I don't think it had to do with a single issue or a single vote or a single person. You know, Peter led us Democrats during one of the most difficult times, during one of the most contentious times in state history, and that was not easy. And holding us together was, you know, an important part. And I mentioned earlier we faced redistricting. We faced changes to campaign finance law and a number of other things that were written by the people that will benefit the most,
mm-hmm.
And some national wave cycles that, you know, have made it difficult. You know, that being said, we have a lot of new members with turnover, with new members coming in that I think, you know, aren't necessarily as invested as they need to be. to feel like they're part of something. And so whether it was anybody's fault or not, I think there was frustration, a disengagement that, you know, led a lot of people to think that, you know, we need to recommit ourselves, get some new leadership in there, and move forward in a way that puts us in a position to be more successful electorally in 2018.
Wisconsin Eye this week introduced a documentary, and it's been worked on for more than a year. It's called Straightforward, The Truth About Addiction. And it's been shown this week to more than 2,000 Wisconsin high school students. It's very powerful. I want to show you a short segment about Adele and her parents. It's about the epidemic of heroin and opioid abuse in our state. Here's a short segment.
The phone would ring and your heart would just stop because you just were expecting it to be that phone call that said she's gone.
But it all came crashing down just as it always does, my parents put me on the streets. They, enough is enough.
She's done controlling our lives. It's not gonna happen anymore, and I made the decision, and it was the hardest thing I ever did. They said, she's not coming back in the house until she gets stuff together. By making that decision, there's times she showed up, rain and cold, whatever, and I turned her away. I said, no, you're not coming in here. I mean, I didn't let her know, but I went back to the room and cried. Because that was my daughter that I just said no. But I had to for us, for the family.
As a dad and a grandfather, that's tough stuff for me to watch. But you can watch Straightforward. I want to tell you how, and we're going to show it on the screen. Straightforward is now available at wisi.org /straightforward. It's worth your attention. Okay, JR. Stock picks, rising.
So right to work. Unions have challenged this law in several venues. Other than the Dane County Circuit Court, they haven't been successful. This past week, the Thursday Court of Appeals shot down basically upheld the law, overturning that Dane County judge's decision, saying the argument's been about unions who negotiate exclusive rights in a bargain in a company. They say we have to cover people who aren't paying dues. That's an unconstitutional taking of our property, essentially.
Yes.
The court said no. The law basically says you can't force somebody to pay dues, but that's it. So, no, sorry. Right to work is legal. And that follows a federal appeals court a year ago, a federal judge a year ago. So, you know, you don't see much of an avenue right now for unions to overturn this law. It's been upheld other states and multiple venues, so that seems to be like they're running out of steam to challenge it.
Remember, that right to work was not a key part of the governor's reelect in 2014.
He brags about it now.
It was added in the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good choice. Rising. Mixed.
So, Scott Walker. It's interesting. Walker has a budget he wanted to have all along because you can talk about these three things, right? The education investment, property tax bill, and no gas tax hike, and then other smaller things like you have a tuition freeze. But what he did to get it could be a problem going forward, because I personally have not seen a governor negotiate with three senators saying, okay, I'll give you these vetoes to get this done. Now, there's a circular argument on the Capitol right now about whose fault it is. Was it Robin Voss's fault because he shut down, you know, amendments in his house,
said,
hey, once we pass
it,
we're
yep.
going away?
Yep.
Is it Scott Fitzgerald's fault because he doesn't necessarily lead his caucus as much as like herd them toward a resolution that closes the deal? Did he enable these guys? Is it Scott Walker's fault because he didn't engage lawmakers enough during the budget process? And it goes around and around and around. But the result is there are these frayed relationships in the Capitol. I don't think Scott Walker and Robin Voss are going to have coffee time soon, unless they have to. They've got some frayed relationships there. So he's got that to deal with. But he also has a Fox kind, like you talked about. There are lots of good things for him and some kind of bad things for him, you know, or possible bad things you got to watch for. But the bottom line is Walker will now go out and hit every school he can. Next couple weeks, talk about
you've seen that schedule.
$640 million.
Today, yes.
Talk about all these good things, and these guys back capital are going, man, this is kind of ugly back here with what's going on.
Falling.
So Andy Gronick, you know, first-time candidate having his first campaign staff shakeup. They confirmed this week their campaign manager is leaving at the end of September. Now, the official word was she only agreed to stay on through the launch and was going to leave, couldn't commit through 18 anyway. Well, the launch was 2 months ago, there's nobody lined up to take her place when she leaves September 30th. So it raises red flags with insiders about, well, this is kind of something more that's going on. No, let's be honest. It's 11 months out from the primary. It's not fatal. You can find somebody else. First-time candidate's going to have some growing pains. And with Gronick, you've heard some Dems say, look, he's getting better on the stump. They loved his six-minute video he put out when he announced, you know, highlighting people's stories. As, you know, this could be a different kind of candidate. But he's also had some negative stories about his business dealings, about some stuff in his background, and you can expect more to come. The question kind of becomes, for all these guys between now and January, is how much do you raise? And, you know, as much as people don't like that, it's the reality in politics. These Democrats, to show strength, have got to raise money. When your campaign manager leaves, makes you wonder, well, can he really self-fund? How much can he put in? How is he doing in that call? We call it call time. It's dialing for dollars, yep, every single day, and you've got to do as a candidate. You know, so these are tests, these guys. And come January, we'll know for sure who's for real and who's not.
And we'll see who he picks up as a campaign manager.
Yep.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 22nd.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.